This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
Tuesday night edition of the Anaheim Calling podcast. We are back to discuss an exciting 5-4 victory for the Anaheim Ducks over the Vancouver Canucks. A back-and-forth affair, obscure rules, injuries, hits. This game, and hat tricks, this game pretty much had it all. Jake here with me, rocking his new Tottenham Hotspur kit.
Yes.
To break it all down.
My wife got me this as a late birthday present, and I'm very, very happy with it. It is a kit that, for whatever reason, I saw when I was in London a couple years ago. I saw someone wearing it, and it caught my eye and was something I've had my eye on for a while. It has some sublimated THFC diamonds on it. It's really cool looking, so I'm very happy with it.
All right, so before we go too far down the soccer rabbit hole, let's bring it back to the frozen pond. Lot to talk about with this game. I mean, it hasn't been too often we've been able to say that with kind of the stretch run of this season. The Ducks obviously out of the playoffs. But there's a lot to talk about with this one. And before we get into it, I guess we should talk a little bit about some news. I mean, really, the only big thing that I did want to mention was that yesterday announced that Ole Eriksson Ek called up, or I guess loaned to San Diego from the Swedish Elite League or the Swedish Hockey League. And I don't know if he, I don't think the goal is played tonight. I'm not sure.
Give me a sec. I think probably the reason why is I would assume that the season for his Swedish team has ended, because I know they end around this time. So he probably has come on over to finish the year with the goals. He's probably going to be the third stringer for them, would be my assumption. So it's the logical place. He's going to be able to practice, be able to maybe catch the eye of Dallas Eakins for possibly future Ducks coach. And he's able to get some practice time with the goals. This may just be a sign that he's going to be with the goals next year, and they want to get him more accustomed to the NHL size rink, because I mean, you were a goalie once upon a time, granted in roller, but I would imagine the change from Olympic to NHL size ice really can affect a goalie.
Yeah. I think that the bigger, you know, what's interesting actually about that, and this just literally popped into my head, I think that it's not so much the size of the ice that changes the way you play. It's more that a smaller rink means you're getting a higher rate of shots from more in tight or tighter angles. And so it's not really that you're adjusting to a smaller rink. It's just you're adjusting to getting those shots more often. Whereas on the bigger rink, you know, shots are usually a little slower developing, so you have more time. So I think it's just more in line with adjusting to the NHL game. It's not as much as with the you know, with the skaters, where I do think there is a big difference in terms of adapting to the size of the ice. But Eriksson Ek, a fifth-round draft pick in 2017, who, you know, 16 games this season in the Allsvenskan, not even the top club in the Swedish Hockey League, and he posted a 901 in 16 games overall. Truth be told, I haven't really spoken that closely with anyone watching him up close in Sweden this season. I should definitely get on that, though. But it just looking at the stats, I mean, not necessarily an eye-popping season. I mean, the year that he was drafted, he did post a 924 in 30 games for the junior team for Färjestad. And so it seems like there's kind of been a steady decline in his stats as he's gone up in level. I mean, he has played to this point zero games in the Swedish Hockey League, the top level. And so it's going to be interesting to see how he fares in the AHL. Although the Allsvenskan is mostly agreed upon to be a very good league, the AHL, I would say, is a step up. And so, I don't know. I mean, he was once anointed to be the next guy in line, or not necessarily next guy in line, but I would say the certainly a guy who had a chance to crack the lineup down the line. And I think he's probably going to need a couple seasons here in the AHL.
Yep. And I think that's pretty normal for a goalie. I mean, he is what now?
He's only 19.
Yeah, which...
he's very young.
That's... how is he only 19?
He was born in 1999.
Why does it feel like he should be older? Why do I feel like he was drafted...
And I guess that I shouldn't hold the games he's played against... the games he's started in the Swedish league against him because...
he did play in World Juniors this year.
It's
also
very rare you see that young of a goalie start in the top Swedish league. So I guess I should retract that a little bit. I'm trying to be fair here, folks. I'm trying to be fair. Okay, but I don't think anyone tuned in tonight to listen to Prospect Talk. We've done plenty of that this season. So let's get into the game. I think one interesting thing going into tonight's game, a line comprising of Sam Steele, Kiefer Sherwood, and Troy Terry. Music to Jake's ears.
Yeah, the kid line.
The kid line.
The kid line. Sam Steele, Troy Terry together. Bonnie's favorite, Kiefer Sherwood on the left wing for that line. I believe that, what does she say? Sherwood and his merry men. Is that going to be the nickname for this line?
I would be for it. I think a medieval reference is always appropriate.
That's Bonnie's go-to line with Sherwood and referencing the fans of Sherwood, but we may need to just make this entire line Sherwood and his merry men.
I mean, it was an interesting line, or sorry, interesting night. It was also an interesting line, but it was an interesting night looking at the different forward lines. You know, there was kind of that demarcation where the kid line was very good, and then the young-ish, I'll call them the young-ish line of Raquel Shore and Silverberg were also quite good. And then Perry Henrique Sprong not really doing quite as well, and then Jones Grant Rowney struggling. And so, it's been interesting with Max Jones. I mean, I thought that he had some pretty good moments on the ice tonight. You definitely notice him out there physically, but I think it's just kind of tough for him on that line right now. I don't know. What'd you see out of him tonight?
It was not a great performance.
I mean, I think it's just hard for him because Derek Grant just doesn't do a whole lot. I mean, I think that he's a guy who the coaching staff seems to love. He's responsible, presumably, but he's just kind of a low event guy. And I think that Jones is better off, has shown that he's better off with guys who are more active up and down the ice. Anyway.
Yeah. He kind of really has to be matched up. He's very good on the forecheck. And I feel like that line doesn't exactly lend itself to what he does well, because the other guys kind of are trying to be in that scenario. Also, it doesn't really give him an outlet option once he does end up with the puck in the zone. And so it just kind of feels like a weird line construction, to be honest.
Right. I mean, it's a little odd, but I mean, if you look at the Ducks' other three lines, I think that it's hard to really disagree with the way that they're constructed. I think that Bob Murray is definitely trying things right now. Yep. And it definitely worked out for him tonight. So I guess we should touch a little bit on the defensive pairings before jumping into the recap. Fowler and Walensky together once again. I thought that on an eye test level, Walensky to me had some really good moments. I thought on the flip side, Fowler had some real rough moments. Just once again, overcomplicating things, moving the puck, was out there for a few goals against. But statistically, they were pretty good. And so I think that you put that together, kind of a wash for them. Mm-hmm. Lindholm Manson, I thought this was probably one of the worst games they've played in a while. I don't know. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think... I don't really know if Lindholm necessarily had a bad game, but his stats aren't fantastic. I think Manson didn't have a great game.
Manson had a rough game. It ended for him with a return to the locker room in the third period.
Yeah.
Let's just break it down right now. I mean, early in the first period, or was it in the first period?
It was in the first period.
First period, Josh Manson goes for a hit that ends up being a little low against Adam Gaudette, and it's a roughing call. Basically, Gaudette is on his knees, kind of losing his balance, sliding along the wing.
Not on his knees. He's bent over a bit.
Well, he's not upright. Let's just put it that way. And Manson goes in and kind of unnecessarily takes a shot at his head area, we could call it.
Yeah. And so I think that probably the right call. I mean, the right call was definitely made on the ice. This is just a minor penalty. And I mean, we had a little bit of a debate in our Slack chat between me, you, and CJ about whether or not there should be a suspension on this play because of the fact that the NHL is really looking at protecting head contact. And I think where I fall on this play is that basically because Gaudette is bent over and it's kind of like his head's bobbing up and down, and it's not as if he's kind of in a predictable spot where Manson can fully know where he's going to be, it kind of makes it hard for Manson to fully make a clean hit, regardless of how, like, what precautions he would have taken going into that. It definitely was a penalty. Let's be real on that. But I don't think this probably will warrant supplemental discipline because of the fact that you do have that as being a part of the decision-making process with the Department of Player Safety of, did the player who got hit put himself in a bit of a vulnerable spot there?
Right. I think that the play was the case was adequately adjudicated, to use legal terms. Yes. I think that realistically it was a roughing penalty. I think that it was definitely borderline. But keep in mind, folks, the NHL uses the result of the play almost just as much as they do the original intent. And so the fact that Gaudette was not hurt on the play, that there wasn't any resulting, you know, I would say at least shakeup, didn't have to go back to the locker room, unless I'm misremembering that. I think that overall,
I don't think so.
Proper punishment fit the crime, and I would be very shocked if this even had any supplemental discipline, even in the form of a hearing. But it was just a bad play from Josh Manson. Let's kind of put that aside for now. This has just kind of been my gripe with Josh Manson this season, and I understand it on an emotional level because I do think that he is trying to be that emotional spark plug for this team. But to me, when Josh Manson is at his best, it's actually not when he's throwing his body around and just leveling guys and trying to really make a hit happen. It's when he's playing that quiet, solid two-way game where, yes, he is being physical, but he's making smart plays with the puck. And I thought tonight he just teetered a little too much on the other end of the scale, you know, just trying a little too hard to be that guy. And I think that for him, especially going into next season, to really become a leader on this team, because I do think that in some of Bob Murray's veiled comments about targeting some of the young veterans on the team, I think he is one of those guys in the crosshairs.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think that maybe this could be a learning experience for him. What do you think?
Yeah, and I think where Manson gets into trouble is when it's almost as if, I mean, it's not almost as if, he is the player with, I think, the most, with kind of the most physical impact on that back end. He's mm-hmm. the player that can make that big ice hit, that can really kind of set the tone in that way. And whether or not that's important, that's kind of up to you and dependent on how you view the game, whether you think that is a necessary thing in the modern day game. But I think that Manson is a player, and especially the Ducks organization as a team, is an organization that does believe in that kind of making a difference. Mm-hmm. And so I think where Manson gets into trouble is he almost views himself as needing to be that physical presence. And when he does, he kind of takes himself out of the play to go and make a hit. And I think that's where he gets into trouble, because one of Manson's best assets is his ability to almost just make a 2-foot pass.
Mm-hmm. Right.
As dumb as it sounds, your an ability to make a 2-foot pass in the defensive zone on with a tape to tape pass that can either spring your defensive partner and allow him to make a clean exit, or give it to a forward to be able to exit the zone with speed. That's such an important play and something that not a lot of players make. I can remember when Manson first broke into the league, one of the things that most impressed me was just he was below the goal line, had a guy pressuring him, and legitimately just made a 2-foot pass between the triangle of the player, so between the heel of their stick and their skate, to his teammate to lead the rush out of the zone. And it was just such a small, such a very minute play, but it just kind of showed that he was not worried about using the boards. He was worried about making the tape pass. And I think when he gets out of his game and is really focusing on going for making the hit, that's when he gets into trouble.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that we're in agreement there. The Frostback in the Twitch chat definitely agreeing with there, just in all caps. God, I so agree on this Manson take, Jake. I do. I'm going to echo that as well. Maybe not in all caps, but I think that we're on the same page here. And so the game would end in an ugly fashion for Josh Manson. Goes to make a hit, I believe, on Tanner Pearson behind the net, behind the Ducks net at the end of the third. If it wasn't Tanner Pearson, go ahead and correct me. I think it was. And so goes to make the hit. And again, it's kind of a high hit. Got to say Pearson's head was a little bent over as well. But instead of getting a clean hit off, Manson just gets a face full of helmet and it basically knocks him out. I mean, it knocks him off balance, has a hard time getting up, had to go back to the locker room. I think he'll be okay. I would not be shocked if he maybe missed the next game for precautionary purposes. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. But
who,
I don't know.
Who would they call up then? Gouley? Is Gouley going to be healthy finally?
That is a good question. I mean, maybe Larson.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, maybe just logistically it would be too difficult to actually pull that off. Okay, but let's move past the Manson incidents here. I think we've covered his night pretty succinctly, or maybe not so succinctly, whatever you want to call it. Let's get into the full recap, though. So, first period, we haven't really talked about Sam Steele yet, which is pretty shocking considering the guy had 3 goals tonight on 3 shots. So let's get into his first goal. Halfway through the first period, makes a really nice read in the defensive zone, just kind of presses up to the point right at the right instance, and then from there intercepts a pass. He's able to show off a little speed, a little burst. I mean, gets past 2 guys, one of them being Elias Pettersson, and just goes low block or 5 hole on Jacob Markstrom.
Yeah.
Just kind of opens him up with a little move, and that would make it 1-0 Anaheim. And I mean, we'll have plenty more opportunities to talk about Sam Steele, but what do you think about this play in particular?
I think it was a very kind of subtle play. It wasn't. And it's funny because this is kind of exactly what the calling card of Sam Steele was, is that he's not exactly a flashy player. And this goal was not a breakaway goal that was like a flashy goal that's going to be on highlight reels everywhere. But it was a smart play, a very heady play, which is kind of the knock on Steele. He's very, very smart with the puck. He's a very intelligent player, high hockey IQ, that type of thing. And he opens him up and puts it 5 hole. Not too flashy, but beats him, and it's a goal.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that overall, start to finish, it was just a good play from Sam Steele, and it's what he's kind of been billed as, is this reliable two-way center. Certainly showed that off right there. Jake Virtanen. Jake, your fellow Jake.
Shotgun Jake? Have you heard about that?
Shotgun Jake?
Yeah.
There was
this thing up, I think it was they used to do the Curtain blog. They're now, I think, on TSN Radio. I can't think of their names for the life of me right now, but somehow it got started with something on Twitter where anytime Jake Virtanen scores, Canucks fans will shotgun a beer.
Interesting.
Jake.
That is a pretty bold strategy there, Cotton. Okay. Let's get into this Virtanen goal. I mean, there's not a whole lot to it. Just kind of drives it all the way down the wing. Andy Walensky does a fairly reasonable job here of just kind of keeping him as wide as he can, forces Virtanen back to his backhand, and then from there, Virtanen's centering pass just hits Cam Fowler's skate in front. It deflects between the pads of John Gibson, and that would make it 1-1. Another goal to break down here in the first period, this time Alex Edler from the point. Not, again, a whole lot to break down on this one. I mean, Pettersson wins a battle down low, and then it gets sent back to the point. He just hammers it on net, Alex Edler does. It hits Corey Perry's skate and just kind of takes a weird bounce and beats John Gibson. I'm going to say this because I kind of want to get it out of the way now. I don't think John Gibson had a very good game tonight. I think that although some of the goals, maybe you can't directly blame him, he just didn't seem very focused. I know there's not a great way to quantify that, although I guess 4 goals allowed to 2 goals expected. Maybe corroborates that a little bit. I just thought that he was missing pucks. He was sometimes losing them, losing sight of the puck. You know, when a goalie's truly locked in, it seems like he can just find the puck through a crowd. And in tonight's game, I just didn't feel like John Gibson really had that. He's had a good season. I'm not saying this to say he's a bad goalie or anything, but I don't know. Didn't think he had a very good night. What'd you think?
I don't think it was definitely his best night ever. I think there were some goals that he's definitely going to want back as we move on into this recap. Some of the later goals specifically, I think he would want back. I don't think he was terrible. He had some good saves, and especially looking at some of the expected goals on the night, it was a lot of shots kind of from outside. And if you look at the first 2 goals, they were kind of more so from low danger areas on the ice. So maybe you can gripe with him on that. But then again, you look at the first goal, it was a deflection off a skate in front. Second goal also deflected in a weird way.
Right.
And so I don't know how much blame I'm going to want to put on him, but in the same breath, when he's on, somehow he makes the reactionary save on those, if that makes sense.
Right. I mean, look, it's very difficult to be out of this world every single game.
Yep.
And I think tonight the Ducks weren't particularly great defensively, even though the defensive metrics are not that bad. They didn't seem that engaged defensively. I mean, that's kind of what's going to happen between two non-playoff teams at the end of the season. I think you can kind of expect a barn burner between the both sides. But let's get through another Sam Steele goal, his second of the night, and this would be just about halfway or just a little bit past the halfway point of the second period. Kiefer Sherwood, who, by the way, had a really good game tonight. I mean, Sam Steele had three goals, and I thought that obviously he was the player of the game, man of the match, whatever you want to call it. But Kiefer Sherwood's fingerprints were all over this game. I mean, he was in on a lot of these goals, yes, making plays all over the ice. And this goal was no different. I mean, he's able to make a really nice zone entry, basically just negating a clearing attempt from the Canucks. I mean, he makes the right read. He sees that the Canucks skater is bobbling the puck, and then that's exactly when you should jump on a guy instead of hanging back. Does that, and then makes a nice zone entry, controls it, just fires it on net. What I love about Kiefer Sherwood's game is that he doesn't seem to overthink ever. He just, I'm either going to shoot or I'm going to hold on to it and pass. It never seems to be that complicated for him. And then lo and behold, Troy Terry drives to the net. He's not able to corral the rebound. But there's Sam Steele, Johnny on the spot, or I guess Sammy on the spot. He's able to kick the puck up from his skates and onto a stick. He just fires it into the net, second goal of the night, and that would make it a 2-2 hockey game. So pretty strong play, strong sequence all around for the kid line.
Yeah, and I think it's a really nice drive to the net by Sherwood. And then you have Steele coming in and making a really, really nice play to get the puck from his skate to a stick. That's a much more difficult play than I think a lot of people realize, to be able to make that right onto your stick and release the shot right away. And to make it look that fluid. So I think that that's a really nice play right there from Sam Steele, and gets rewarded with a goal. Drove the net, found the puck, and was able to bury it. So two goals for him on the night.
Right. A lot of people are clamoring in the Twitch chat to talk about the backhand goal. Believe me, folks, we will get to it. And here it is. It's actually the next goal on the night with just under a minute left in the second period. This is the most controversial point of maybe the entire Ducks season.
This was a
obscure, just bizarre play. Honestly, I've never seen this happen. Brian Hayward, who has been playing hockey longer than I've been alive, and who played I don't know how many years of professional hockey, has been a commentator all these years, also said he's never seen it. Let's just break it down here. Jake is obviously going to disagree how I describe this play. That's fine by me.
Obviously.
That's fine by me. I don't care that much.
I know you don't.
And so it was actually a really nice sequence, once again, by the kid line. Yes. Max Jones also had a good little sequence before getting off for a change. The players, the forwards, just controlling the puck down low along the wall, ultimately gets back to Cam Fowler, who tries to feather it across, going D to D. And right as he does that, Marcus Granlund throws his stick into the passing lane. And you can quibble with, did he do it before the pass was actually released? Did he do it after? He throws it right into the passing lane, which, why would he ever do that? He's just, and this was a broken stick, by the way. I should mention there was a broken stick on the ice. He essentially shoots it into the passing lane because obviously he's just trying to get it out of the zone. There would be no other ulterior motive for him doing that, especially when his team is hemmed in. Why would he do that? He's clearly just trying to clear it. Anyway, there is a rule in the NHL rulebook. It is rule 56.
Tone, I hate you so much.
It is rule 56.6, and I'm going to read it word for word because I want to let you, the listener, interpret it for yourself. Can I pull it up here? Oh, geez, do I not have it? Oh, this is really killing me.
Unprepared. Unprepared.
I thought I had it in front of me, but it's not mocking, the right one.
Mocking me and then not being prepared with your mock.
This is
killing
me. Okay, no. Hold on. I have a backup plan. I have a backup plan. Don't worry.
Wow.
This is a big thank you to George because he posted it in the chat.
How dare you mock me?
How am I mocking you? Okay, so this is the rule. Rule 53.6. Jeez, I thought it was 56.6. Well, then maybe I can go back to it in the actual rule book. Sorry, folks.
Just read it.
Okay, well, no, hold on. 53.6, penalty shot. Okay. When any member of the defending team, including the coach or any non-playing person, throws or shoots any part of a stick or any other object or piece of equipment at the puck or puck carrier in his defending zone, the referee or linesman shall allow the play to be completed, and if a goal is not scored, a penalty shot shall be awarded to the non-offending team. This shot shall be taken by the player designated by the referee as the player fouled. If the officials are unable to determine the person against whom the offense was made, the non-offending team, through the captain, shall designate a player at the time of the offense where the act was committed. So, all this to say, the referees saw and the play that happened, they determined that this was in violation of rule number 53.6 as defined in the National Hockey League rule book, and then presumably because they were not able to identify the player who had been fouled, they allowed the captain to pick a player, and naturally they picked Sam Steele, 2 goals on the night. He goes in on the penalty shot and probably pulls off one of the most confident-looking moves that you can ask for from a guy playing in a game where he has a chance to get his first career hat trick, you know, maybe hasn't had the greatest season, comes down on Jacob Markstrom, you know, with a good pace, not too slowly, goes forehand, backhand, and instead of where you see guys, you know, hold on to the puck or they keep contact between the blade and the puck all the way through the shot, he essentially pulls his backhand back and just basically does almost like a reverse slap shot up into the top shelf, and that would make it 3-2 Anaheim, a really confident play from Sam Steele. So, now that I've talked about the goal, Jake, you have an issue with how this play
People think you actually believe what you said, so do you want to backtrack a bit before you end up getting roasted and being associated with my view?
Hmm?
People think that you think it was an incorrect call in our chat right now.
Oh, no. So, if you're... Please don't mistake my sarcastic tone for me actually agreeing with the ruling here. I actually think...
Wait. You just said, please don't mistake your tone as agreeing with the ruling.
Or sorry, please don't mistake my sarcastic tone for me disagreeing with how this play was ruled upon. I think that by the letter of the rule, this was clearly a violation of that rule. Though I think that the refs did the right thing. If it's in a playoff game, in a game 7, does it get called? Maybe, maybe not. But I think that it was a fine call. Really, I don't see how you can disagree with it. But Jake, you completely disagree. So tell us why. Make the case.
So, I'll make the case. Put 2 minutes on the clock. I'll get this thing out. So, the reason why I don't like this call, to be honest, is that with the NHL and with rules in the NHL, a lot of it's really cut and dry. With a high stick, for instance. A high stick is a high stick. Whether there's... it's cut and dry. You catch the guy in the face, then that's it. And so to me, the way that this is worded, with it being...
Yes, the league that cannot agree on goaltender interference is a cut and dry league.
You shoot the puck at... it's worded as shooting the stick at the puck. To me, you are ruling upon the intent of the player that he pushed the stick into the path of the puck. To me, that's not shooting it at the puck because the puck was not released on a pass. I'm getting roasted by for this. I know I am. But to me, you're getting into some gray area there that you're judging intent. And whether or not he meant to put it in that pass lane, whether he meant to try to get it out of the zone, I don't know. It's very likely it could be one of those two. Or that it could be one or it could be the other. It's obviously one of those two. But you're getting into some very... When you're starting to judge based on intent, it's a very weird middle ground that you're trying to end up in. And that's where I don't like it that much. And why I'd rather this not be called, simply because you're judging based upon what you thought. He was shooting it in that area to stop the puck. It's not like he shot it at Fowler, shot it at the puck on Fowler's stick. He kind of put it out trying, and you can make the argument he was trying to get out of the zone. And the fact that there's that gray area is kind of why I'm not a fan of the call.
Right, but the thing is, the language is written probably to be interpreted. I don't know. But I'm going to give you some props here because you did that in under 2 minutes. So congratulations to
Perfect.
You. Look, it was a bizarre rule. I'm kind
it's
of
100%
a fan. I'm a fan
rule.
Of it, though. I mean, the NHL needs more weird, quirky moments like this where you have fans scrounging up their NHL rule book or searching it online and looking up rules.
Like me.
I think this is good for the game.
Oh, 100%. 100%. And I mean, it's pretty much my brand to look up an obscure rule and try to take a stance on it. I feel like I've established that at this point.
Right. I mean, I don't know. I reading that, seeing the play, I think that they go hand in hand. Great call by the officials.
Yes.
And look,
I got Tyler on my side.
It got Sam Steele as his first NHL hat trick, so I don't know why you're complaining so much.
Well, no, I'm really actually happy for Sam Steele having said that.
Are we sure you're happy for Sam Steele? Because all I'm hearing is the opposite.
I'm happy for Sam Steele.
How dare you tear down a young man trying to make
it was a very nice. It was a very nice backhand shot. And as Bionic in our chat said, as he was at the Podcast Classic on Sunday, he shot like I do when there's no one around me, like in the post game of the Podcast Classic when I was going bar down.
Yes.
You got
anyway,
nothing to say to that.
All right. I think we should move on from this topic. You know, I feel like we haven't really done justice to how much time we actually spent debating this in our Slack chat, as opposed to how much time we've talked about it on the pod. But you know what? I am okay with that because
we established both sides of the argument.
Truth
and now
be told, between this and Ole Eriksson X career arc, I don't know. I don't know which one wins necessarily. Okay. Let's get on with the show here. Rickard Rakell on the power play. Rickard Rakell, who, by the way, has been playing pretty well lately, gets a power play goal. Troy Terry with a secondary assist sets up Adam Henrique, who then gets it over to Rakell in that left side circle. And by the way, I want to mention this because I talked about this a couple podcasts ago. Rickard Rakell does not opt for the one-timer in this situation, even though he is in the one-timer spot. The left face-off circle instead goes for the catch and release. And I'm not going to fault him for it because it goes short side on Markstrom. A good screen from Jakob Silverberg. That would make it 4-2 Anaheim. And it was starting to feel like the floodgates were opening because Kiefer Sherwood would then pounce on a turnover in the Canucks zone. Really doesn't. And again, this is what I talked about with Kiefer Sherwood. Does not overcomplicate things. Sees the puck, left all alone the slot. As soon as he gets it, releases it, goes far side on Markstrom. That would make it 5-2 Anaheim. And I don't know, at that point, did it kind of feel like it was over for you?
Yeah. After the Sherwood goal, I felt like the game was over. And also at that point, I know that Bonnie, wherever she was at that point in time, was jumping up and down for joy because she just had a Rakell goal and a Sherwood goal back-to-back.
Yes, yes. I mean, I'm happy for Kiefer Sherwood because I don't think that, you know, if the Ducks season doesn't maybe go the way it does, I think he probably stays up in Anaheim. I think that might be fair to say. But the Ducks lead would not remain as imposing.
Quick question for you.
Sure.
Piggy7Swatcher said, I missed this, Ricky. Has Rickard Rakell, I know we've talked about this a little bit here and there in the past, and I think maybe have dove into it actually on a previous pod. Is Rakell playing different now than he was a month or two ago?
Is he playing better or are more pucks going in?
Yes, that's the question.
I think that he's put maybe in a little bit of a better situation than he was before, you know, especially with the power play alignment. I'm not seeing a whole lot of difference in his game, though. I think that generally he's just experiencing a little better puck luck. You know, I don't think that he's been having this awful season. I just think that he needed some bounces to go his way, and that's what we're seeing here a little bit.
Yep, I agree.
Anyway, let's round out the recap here because the last few minutes of this game were actually pretty exciting. Josh Levo would get the Canucks within two. They bring it down the ice, Tanner Pearson carrying it down, and then Levo just basically forechecking here, and then he's able to cause a turnover. And this is not really a good look for the Ducks. This was actually one of those moments where I thought that Manson and Lindholm looked particularly bad. You know, just kind of standing around, no pressure. He's able to curl it back into the middle of the ice, just fires it on John Gibson. maybe a goal you want to see him have back, even though it is from the slot. But that being said, just sloppy defensive play by Anaheim here, and not a great rebound either. No, just overall not great. Oh, and you were talking about the next goal here. Tanner Pearson would bury a rebound in front of the net. Troy Stetcher just fires it on net from the front, or sorry, just fires it on net from the point. And then Tanner Pearson jumps all over it. Now, of course, all rebound goals, they're not always just because of poor rebound control. They can also be because of poor defensive coverage. So on one hand, you have John Gibson not really controlling this rebound whatsoever. On the other hand, you have Josh Manson losing a puck battle in front. All of that equals a Tanner Pearson rebound goal. That would make it 5-4, a one-goal game with just a few minutes left. And the Canucks would press. They would press John Gibson, I guess you could say, was solid in those last few minutes. The Ducks found a way to shut things down. That's also when Josh Manson experienced the injury. But outside of that, no tying goal from the Canucks. The Ducks do take this one 5-4. And that would pretty much do it for what was a very exciting game, an entertaining game, something that we haven't had a whole lot of overall this season.
I mean, it was entertaining. Expected goals-wise, it's kind of weird. It only ended up at 2.13 to 2.11. So it really, from chance perspective, wasn't that high. Then again, this is kind of a weird scenario. As we talked about before we actually went live, the Sam Steele goal, the hat trick goal on the penalty shot, only had, what was it, a 0.13 expected goal?
Yeah, I mean, expected goals is not a perfect metric, folks.
Or 1.2% chance of scoring. So
no, it was 3.7.
I'm looking at it right now, and it says
1.2. So did it change? Did they downgrade it?
They downgraded it. 3.7. You're right, 3.7. Okay. So it doesn't exactly take into consideration well the fact that it's a penalty shot. Yeah, it's more so taking into consideration the type of shot and where it came from as compared to the pressure.
Or
so,
maybe that the stat is right and we just don't get it here. I don't know.
Maybe you only have a 3% chance of scoring on a penalty shot.
I mean, to be fair, that is a very difficult backhand to actually put away.
But I think that if you look at the overall chance, you'd say, I don't know, just guesstimating, you probably have a 50-50 shot of scoring on a penalty shot, maybe a little bit lower.
I would say you have a 30-70 chance, because if you look at the best shootout players, they're usually in the upper 30s, I think, at best. I don't think you see guys really get to 50. And so you have about a 1 in 3 chance, I would say, to score. I think that the deck is somewhat stacked in the goalie's favor. Not by a lot. You know, it's not overwhelming, but it's enough to say that I don't think the shooter has the advantage, which is weird because when you're a goalie, you think it's the opposite. You think, oh, wow, they have the puck. But I think that there's so many more ways for a goalie to get lucky than a skater to get lucky on a penalty shot or a shootout. You know, the skater could lose the puck. They could miss the shot. Whereas, you know, for the goalie, they don't really, you know, I think that they almost in a way have that added margin for error. Anyway, total tangent there.
Really quickly, Kaika Warrior asked, was there an update on Manson injury? I haven't seen anything.
I have not seen anything either, and it looks as though, you know, neither Elliot Tiefer nor Eric Stevens, two beat writers for the Ducks, obviously, are on this trip with Anaheim, and so I'm going to quickly try to see if there's anything from the team Twitter, but should we get into some questions here?
Yep,
do you have anything else you want to add about the game?
No, I think really quickly I do want to kind of show the scoring chances. I think it was exciting with going back and forth, but when you look at the scoring chances, there wasn't a whole lot, I think, from either team. Expected goals here, you can see the game flow chart, and then individual expected goals on the night. And then when we jump in to the heat map for the night, you can see it's kind of spread out and a little bit sparse, to be honest. So we can start jumping into some questions. So for those of you watching the recorded version of this show on either YouTube, and yes, we are on YouTube. You can find us at YouTube And if you search for Anaheim Calling SB Nation, you'll find us. Please subscribe to the channel, like a video, comment there. I'll definitely reply to comments as I see them come in. If they need a, if they're asking a question or things like that, I'll definitely reply to them. Or if you're listening to the recorded version of this on any of your favorite podcast services, whether that's SoundCloud, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, anything like that, we do a live version of this show at twitch.tv/AnaheimCallingSBN, where you can watch and live and interact with us live in the chat. You can also interact with the community that we have in our Twitch chat. We need to come up with a name for the people that are in the Twitch chat other than just...
I like that. I like
that.
We
need to come up with something.
The Twitchies.
The podcast I listen to a lot that uses Twitch calls their fans the best friends.
The best friends.
We need to figure out something to call everyone that is in the Twitch chat, comes to our stuff, and that's our next goal. We got to figure out a name for everyone. But if you like this show, you can support us in a way that's completely free to you. If you have Amazon Prime, you get Twitch Prime. And with that, you can support the show. You just have to link your Amazon Prime account to your Twitch account and hit that subscribe button above Felix's head. Felix, point above your head, please. Felix, point above your head. Up there. Hit that subscribe button up there, and it helps us out a lot.
The Anaheim callers,
or just the callers. Ooh, I kind of like the busy. No, but the busy signal isn't like a group of people.
The callers. I think we may have it. Let's give it some time before ratifying it. But
the first time, long time.
I kind of like the callers.
The callers.
We are Anaheim Calling.
It has to be the callers. Okay, so let's jump into some questions here. So I did want to hit this question really quickly first before we get into the Twitch chat. This came from writer on our site, Tony, who did a really good job of hooking us up with the banners that we had in our picture from the podcast classes. And so he had a question, said, question for the pod, has hope been restored in general manager Bob Murray given the success since Randy Carlyle's firing? Obviously should have happened sooner, but with prospects developing, producing seemingly positive returns on trades and the team playing better / having fun playing, I'd say yes for sure.
I mean, faith restored is kind of, it's a little strong. You know, I think that what I will say is on its face, everything he's done since Carlisle's been fired has, to me at least, been a passing grade. I don't think that he's done any obviously negative. He hasn't done any obviously negative move. I think that the only one you can really kind of quibble over is the Silverberg signing. I think that's one that at best is debatable. I don't think it's obviously bad. I also don't think it's obviously great. I just think it kind of is. It just exists in this world of hockey transactions. But outside of that, I mean, you look at the Brandon Montour trade. I think that, to me, that is one of the, honestly, it's one of the best trades the Ducks have made probably in the last 3 to 4 years, just in terms of the value they were able to recoup for a player who, in my estimation, is not that good. And then, you know, bring up the youngsters, you know, kind of some of the tactical changes. I think that you can call it faith being restored, or you can just call it, yes, Bob Murray is still there. And when Bob Murray is removed from Randy Carlyle, he is still the GM who put together some teams that were, you know, like, for example, a team that was one game away from the Stanley Cup final in 2014-15. So to me, I think that he's just kind of back to where he once was, which was a very good place. Let's not forget the guy has won GM of the year before. Make of that award what you will, but yeah. I do think that he is a capable GM. We've talked a lot about this, about how Randy Carlyle is his blind spot. I'm starting to buy into that a lot more. And
someone even stole that line from me for his radio hit on Vancouver radio yesterday.
Is this the moment in the pod where I have to plug that?
This is me transition or giving you the segue to plug that thing.
So yesterday I got very lucky. I was invited on to Sportsnet 650. My good buddy Ainsley Scott asked me to come on, and I was able to do a hit on 650 in the afternoon. I put up a link on my Twitter. Maybe I'll put it in the description for this pod. Got to break down the Ducks season with the crew up there. They do a good job covering the Canucks, and it was kind of in light of tonight's game. But the one thing that I did want to talk about, and get your shot glasses ready, folks, or get your drink
ready.
We've
got a question.
No, hold on. I want to make this last comparison because it's kind of going, it's buying into a bit. This is hearkening back to the review of Take a Drink whenever Felix makes a Canadians reference, and I'm going to go there. For a long time, Michel Therrien was the blind spot of Marc Bergevin. A lot of people were completely out on Bergevin, including myself.
Wow.
And ever since Therrien has been gone, ever since Therrien was gone, I got to say Bergevin has done all right. All of the moves he's made, they've not all been home runs. It's hard for any GM to do that, but he's done all right. And I think maybe that's the same thing happening in Anaheim. So take a drink. Why is Jake staring into the camera? That's too much.
I'm staring at you. At you. Okay. Alyss A33. So we should briefly mention we did have the pod classic. Well, let's start with this. We had the Patreon watch party actually on Saturday. That was a blast. It was great meeting all of you off the top of my head. Sean from our patrons, Sean, Duncan, Justin, Jennifer, Matt, who else am I? There's more. Russell, Lawrence, Logan. And there's definitely some that I'm forgetting, and I apologize. Tony was there also. Bonnie was there with us in spirit. So thank you for everyone that came out to that, and I apologize if I forgot anyone. We definitely appreciate all of you coming out, and we're definitely going to be doing more of those, some for patrons, some for everyone. It was a really good time, and the place we did it at was fun. And so we'll definitely do more there. And so we had the podcast classic also on Sunday. That did not go so well.
That did not go so well for Team Anaheim Calling. We got beat really bad.
But here's the question from Alyss, A33. Who scored the goals for Team Anaheim Calling?
So I feel like it's only right. It's only fitting that in a game where we lost 10, that's right, a 10-piece, 10-2, that Jake and I for Team Anaheim Calling were the lone goal scorers. I feel like it's fitting. By the way, I had 2 points, goal and an assist. Got to point that out.
Yep. Both of us were plus one on the night. Whoever said plus minus doesn't matter.
In a game where we lost 10-2, we somehow were plus players. By the way, I do want to mention that, well, not really mention, but I want to shout out everyone who came through. It was a lot of fun. Yeah. Although I was severely pissed off for a brief moment on the bench because we were getting our asses kicked, I definitely had a great time. Everyone was super awesome. It was a lot of fun to have our own jerseys this time.
Yes.
And it was fun to have a couple beers in the locker room after. I think just overall, this was a very fun event. And now that we're going to have some more free time in the summer months, maybe this will happen a couple times more. Who knows? Anyway, it was just a lot of fun. Thank you to everyone for coming out.
Well, and then briefly afterwards, you actually joined me for my beer league game also, where we lost also.
Maybe the thing is we're a good individual combination, but our teams just lose.
Maybe. Not us. It's definitely not us.
I mean, our line was pretty good during that beer league game. I got to say, we were probably the best line.
Got lots of chances.
I hit a crossbar.
I got mad at refs.
Oh, this is, I actually want to share this for the podcast.
No,
so,
no, this does not go on the podcast.
I
got very mad.
Jake gave so much hell to a poor beer league official who probably doesn't care at all about what he has to
say. Definitely did not care at all about what
and
I had to say.
Jake is upset about calls not going his way, us losing.
It was a lot of stuff.
Goes right into another player,
hungover.
Puts his stick in the guy's skates, the guy falls.
That did not actually happen.
The guy falls, and then he gets called for tripping. He could have probably been called for anything. He could have been called for roughing, charging.
I was just ready to be fuming. I was fuming at that
whatever
point.
It was, and then he gets called, and he just goes at this referee. And I was just sitting there on the bench. You know, there's this great gif of a basketball player who just has the blank stare, and then all of a sudden he just starts nodding. That was basically me on the bench. Just, yeah, that just happened.
I was done. It was a long day.
Anyway,
it was a long day.
That was pretty
was
good.
Long, long
I was
day.
A good teammate. I set
you
up
were.
the puck pyramid on the bench for the warmups. I was happy with my performance overall. But anyway,
was happy with my performance also.
No one tuned in to listen to us talk about our beer league non-exploits. So, we do have questions to answer.
Bionic asked us, expansion draft is coming in a couple of years. Do you guys feel we will lose a very good prospect or one of the kids?
It's not impossible.
We did a Patreon episode.
Yes, we did.
Down the expansion draft, actually.
Yes. So if you want our full take on all of this, I mean, that's something that will not have changed by now because all of the kind of key moments for that in terms of
Montour's
eligibility.
Really the only biggest difference.
Right. So I would recommend that if you're not yet a patron, I mean, we're going to talk about this again, but that's patreon.com/acpod. $5 a month, you get access to all our bonus episodes. We do 2 bonus episodes a month. We are actually recording tomorrow night. But we did an episode a couple months ago about just the expansion draft for the Seattle draft. And so if you're curious about that, definitely check it out. But that being said, just to kind of at least say something here, it's a possibility that they lose someone. It's not saying it's going to happen, but it's a possibility.
And then Tony asked me to read his DM that he sent me on Saturday, which I did not read on the podcast because I was busy trying to figure out how many shots we had to take and how many Chicken McNuggets we were eating. So you missed a good one, by the way, for that.
I did.
Loads of Chicken McNuggets.
I did. I was at a wedding. It was just everything happening all at once. I will be at the next watch party, mark my words.
So, not sarcastic, Silverberg question for the pod. Knowing what we know now about the Ducks probably trying to dump Kessler and Eves' contract, you can only assume that Bob Murray had this plan for a while now. Does this change your opinion on the Silverberg contract, seeing as we probably got him for $1 million plus less than market value? I know you don't think he's a bad player, but without Kess and Eves' contract, do you think it was still a mistake to sign him, or the contract was still a mistake?
I feel like this is a question for you, Jake.
I still think not moving him was a mistake. I don't necessarily think the contract was as big of a mistake. I still think the not moving him and signing him on July 1, granted, that's not a for sure, but I still think that's probably the best option there. I think if Kessler and Eves are completely off the books and they can move another contract, then I'm good with it. And like, I think it's going to be really good moving forward.
I think it's a contract that in terms of the on-ice performance may not age well, but I think the contract itself may age well because of the rising cap and the fact that it's already below market value.
Have I had the score wrong this whole... No. Bionic Christ just made me think I had the score wrong. The wrong score was for the... Or we had the wrong score. He may have been talking about the last pod. It's very likely. So let's jump into some of these other questions that have come in. Boom Snap Bam said, if you were Ducks management, would you be more confident in trading veteran forwards this summer to give space for Sherwood, Steele, plus possibly Lundestrom and Comtois?
I don't think it matters. I don't think that your estimation of those young players necessarily matters, because I think that some of those guys have to be traded regardless of how good you expect the youngsters to be. I mean, if part of your calculus is how good you expect those youngsters to be, I think that they are showing that at the very least they can play NHL hockey and hold their own. But I do think that for the long-term flexibility of this team and its ability to get back into that contender conversation, not playoff contenders, but Stanley Cup contenders, I think you still have to move some contracts to make space. That's just, to me, it just doesn't matter what you think about the youngsters in that equation.
Yep. We had a question. Where was this question? From Bob Shock. He said, Steele, Jones, or Terry? Which one is the future star?
Steele, Jones, or Terry? Well, do we even have to ask Jake this question?
Yeah, I don't need to give you an answer. You know what my answer was.
I mean, is it bad if I answer none of the above? I mean, I don't think any of them are necessarily going to become stars. I think within the fan base, I could see Max Jones becoming kind of a fan favorite just because of the way that he plays with his physicality. If he can bring a scoring touch, I could see him becoming a fan favorite. You know, the Ducks fans have gotten used to seeing guys like Corey Perry over the years, and I believe that Max Jones is in that vein. Obviously not to the same degree. I don't see Max Jones winning a Hart Trophy during his career, but I could see him kind of being a fan favorite. And of course, I mean, Troy Terry, I'm getting booed by the Twitch chat here, but I think, of course, Troy Terry, if he can fulfill his goal-scoring potential,
it's 100% Terry.
Has the chance to become that.
Terry. All right. Piggy Seven Swat said, question, assuming we get a top six, we get a top six and draft a center, whether it be Hughes, Cousins, or Doc, all of whom seem to have good scoring touch, does that increase Lundestrom, or does that increase Lundestrom's, who's more of a checking or defensive center than offensive, chances of being part of a package for one of the big RFAs this summer, and Bob Murray, because we need more offense? So basically, if the Ducks do get a guy with more scoring touch, does that make Lundestrom more expendable?
So what was the first part of that question?
If the Ducks are able to get a Hughes, or I mean, I know this is a drop off, or a Cousins, or a Doc, does that make Lundestrom more expendable?
Oh boy, that's a tough question. I think it makes Steel more expendable.
Interesting.
Because I don't think that Lundestrom has much present value in terms of getting a trade, you know, making a trade. Obviously, it depends on the team that you're dealing with. If they have an emphasis on, you know, European scouting, maybe they would value a Lundestrom over a Steel. But to me, I think that Lundestrom will have more upside than Sam Steel. And I could end up being very wrong about that, by the way. I'm very open to that possibility. But based off what I've seen from the two players, based off what I've seen from Lundestrom on an eye test level as an 18-year-old, I think that he can be at least what Sam Steele's floor will be in the NHL. I think he can be that. And so to me, who is going to get you more value in a trade? To me, that answer is obviously Sam Steele. And for that reason, I would say that if you get a Hughes, right, it ends up being just what you want to do. I think either route, either path here is justifiable, right? Because if you trade a Steele, that's a tough call. You know, wouldn't you love to have a center depth of, you know, Hughes, Henrik, Steele, or something like that? But at the same time, you know, trading a Lundestrom, that's not an easy pill to swallow either. So I think that the ultimate answer to this question is getting a Hughes or a, you know, a top line center makes one of Anaheim's center prospects more expendable. Because at that point, you're dealing with a position of strength, or you just kind of wait it out. I don't know. But I agree with the overall kind of, I think, spirit of that question.
Okay. Let me go through these. Let's hit two more questions. This one came in from Diehard24Fan24. That's Matt, who said, how many points? Oh, also, I want to mention, Matt came all the way from Woodland Hills to our watch party on Saturday. I believe Duncan came from Apple Valley, I believe, something like that. So we had people, and I think Russell also came from out in Temecula. So a lot of people came from really far away, and it's really appreciative and very humbling that you guys would do that to come and watch that game with us. So thank you for that. So Matt's question is, how many points will the lazy boy Jakob Silfverberg post next season with the full season free from shutdown line plus no Randy Carlyle?
I think I'm going to pencil him in for, I mean, I think the floor is 20 for him. But I could see him getting, you know, if the over under is, let's say, 23.5, I don't know why I just set that, but I would take the over. I could see him getting 25 goals next year. Not hard to imagine in a more offensive role in a more offensive system.
Yep. Agreed. Let's see. I don't think I asked this already, even though I feel like I did. Boomstat Bam asked, if you were Ducks management, would you be more confident in trading veteran forwards this summer to give space to Sherwood? Definitely did ask that already. Definitely did.
Red wine. Hey, it's the third time I've sang on the show this season. Everyone should
feel there you go. Frostback asked, do you think we trade into the top two picks this season at the draft, given our depth and friendly contract signings? And then he also agrees with you on Jones being the next star.
So the first part of that question?
Do you see the Ducks trading to get into the top two?
I mean, I don't see it. You're asking me if I see it. If I would do it, yes, because I'm pulling that trigger. But if I am asked to predict what this management group will do, I can't see them doing it. I think that they're going to be just fine with their sixth, their fifth, or seventh pick. Whatever it's going to be, I think they're going to take it. Now, I don't know. It really depends, because I think that the Ducks are... I think you do feel a little urgency with this management group. I think that you could... I think there is a universe where maybe if they're just so far out of the top five, right? Maybe if they end up with the eighth pick, although I don't think that that's very likely. I think that they're probably going to be in at least six. Let's say they get the eighth pick. Could they package 8 plus 20 plus insert prospect for 4 or 5? I don't know. Do you make, or 3? I don't know if you make that trade. I don't know if, I just don't think that that kind of trade is viable for the team that's trading away the top 3 pick. And that's kind of my issue with these conversations is that,
yeah,
sure, the Ducks could trade up, but what team would want to trade a top 3 pick?
Well,
to get a top 3 pick, you have to be really bad, which sucks for everyone in the organization, from, you know, people selling tickets to the GM to fans. It just sucks. And then on top of that, you have to be very lucky. So to trade a top 3 pick or a top 2 pick, it has to be a just knock you out of the water, blow off your socks type offer. I don't know. I don't see it happening.
Yeah. Yep. I just realized I didn't. I'm just going to read the names of the people of the watch party once I finish this last question.
Good.
So that I've mentioned everyone. I have a list that I realized I should have just used in the first place. But let's end with this question. Ken Paffy said, question, do you think trading, and this kind of goes hand in hand, mentioning an actual trade, do you think that, and he kind of said is smart, but I'm going to reword it to, would the team that they're trading to do this, both of the Ducks' first round picks plus Henrique for the second overall pick?
No. No.
Just such a hard no sell. Hard no sell.
I mean, Adam Henrique does not have that much value. If it's Raquel or Gibson, and maybe you take out a pick, then I think you're talking. But I don't think that a Henrique, I don't think anyone that's not a goal scorer or that's above 25 or that's not a star goalie or Hampus Lindholm gets it done. I think it's got to be Lindholm, Gibson, or Raquel, plus the top, plus their own pick. I think that's where the conversation starts to get into the top 3 or top 2.
Yeah. All right. So,
and by the way, I would do that deal if I was the Ducks.
Yeah. So, let's go with this. So, I do want to read the names real quick. So, it was Russell, Duncan, Matt, Jennifer, Chad, Tony, Justin, and so them plus all the people they brought along with them plus all our staff. It was definitely a very good time. So,
yes, thank you very much. And I will be there next time. Mark my words, write it in stone.
All right. So let's start wrapping this thing up. So it was brought to my attention today by Lawrence Samuel that we have some reviews on the UK version of iTunes, that there is such a thing. And I should have maybe realized I should look at this after we found out we had some Canadian reviews. So let me read them. So we've got two.
Next up, Singapore reviews after this pod.
Yes, exactly. Sweden. I got to learn Swedish next to find it. Finchy3 gave us a 5-star review. Great podcast. Said, thanks, guys, for keeping me up to date on all things Ducks from this side of the pond. And then a UK flag. And then Lawrence Samuel gave us essential listening for any overseas Ducks fan and gave us 5 stars. He said, as a relative newcomer to the NHL, 7 hours separated from Anaheim during the regular season, the Anaheim Calling podcast is a godsend. Jake and Felix do provide a well-researched, unbiased, irreverent look at the Ducks and accompanying aspects of the league that has improved this Brit's knowledge of the team, the game, and its rules far beyond what I could have hoped, could have achieved on my own. It is also worth acknowledging the effort the hosts and staff have put into fostering a community that allows their listeners to put questions to the team and influence the content of the pod. For someone who can't always watch games live, Anaheim Calling the podcast is essential listening, and I can't recommend it highly enough. So
thank you.
Thank you so much, as Felix has gotten into a battle about basketball in our Twitch chat.
Oh, man. For those who don't know me, I'm a diehard NBA fan and obviously a Warriors fan. So
Felix,
if you ever want to trigger me, just make a comment about the Warriors. I don't know why I'm giving this away. Probably a really bad decision.
Very bad decision.
But if you ever want to incite long, passionate conversation, I will always be up for an NBA debate. Okay. It looks as though Jake is plugging the shirts.
Yes, they are up on the screen. They are in our Twitch chat. You can find them in the descriptions. If you want to buy one of these t-shirts, mine came in. It's very nice. They're very nice quality. Go check it out. And yeah, so if you've ever wanted to represent the podcast in any way, shape, or form, go to teespring.com/acpodlogo and you can find the shirt. And yeah, and then we also are on Patreon. You can find us at patreon.com/acpod. As Felix mentioned earlier, we will be recording our second Patreon episode of the month tomorrow. The plan right now is to do a mailbag segment. So if you are a patron, please reply to the post on the Patreon website or let us know in the Patreon suggestion section of the Discord for what you want to hear, any questions you have, whether it's on topic, off topic. The season's kind of winding down, so give us whatever you want, whether it's favorite Disney movies, whether it's who knows, whatever you want us to kind of go off on, whether you want to hear us yell at each other, because there's plenty of things that Felix and I will not agree on and go at each other on. It happens plenty of times in our Slack chat, don't you worry. So let us know with that. What else do we have?
Well, with all that being said, thanks a lot for listening tonight, guys. Definitely check out, the shirts. They're awesome. I'm ordering mine tonight because I need one. They're awesome. I love our logo. And if you love the pod, this is a great way to support. And if you haven't already, if you've been enjoying the show or if you're a new listener, definitely check us out on the Apple Podcast app. We already mentioned here, you know, we really do appreciate those great reviews. It lets us know exactly what we're doing right or maybe what we're doing wrong. You know, it's a great way for us to just keep growing and keep improving. That's the goal here, obviously. And then, of course, we are also on other podcast platforms, SoundCloud, Stitcher. We're also on YouTube. We've plugged that already on the show, but I should mention it again because it turns out a lot of people like to listen on the podcast on YouTube. It also will include the Twitch video feed. And then, of course, if you enjoy the Twitch stream, right, a lot of people have now joined in. Definitely mm-hmm. tell your friends. And if you're not yet a caller, then I definitely recommend that you check us out. That's twitch.tv/AnaheimCallingSBN. After every game, we do a live stream.
You've triggered our entire Twitch chat. I hope you understand that.
What did I say?
I don't know. But I just see everyone calling you a troll.
It's because I said Kobe isn't good. Kobe is the most... Kobe Bryant is literally...
Stop before everyone comes after you.
No, that's fine. I'm ready for war. Kobe Bryant is the most overrated basketball player of all time. There, I'm done. Okay.
He's not.
Last thing I was going to say. Yes, YouTube. So definitely check us out there. And then twitch.tv/AnaheimCallingSBN. Join the fun. We get into these crazy debates in the chat. They're certainly entertaining, if nothing else. You also get to witness everyone calling me out as I speak during the show. So that's always fun. At least for you guys. Maybe not so much for me. No, just kidding. It's fun. And then, of course, make sure to check out AnaheimCalling.com. That's at AnaheimCalling on Twitter. Check out Jake on Twitter. He's at ReindeerGames91. Hit him up. Ask him why that's his username on Twitter. I'm sure he'd love to answer it. It's actually kind of an interesting story. Follow me on Twitter. I'm at Felix_Sicard. I'm tweeting during games, tweeting about Ducks news. Occasional article. It's been a little sparse lately. And then I will be putting that Sportsnet hit in the description of this podcast. Thanks a lot for listening tonight, guys. We will be back to discuss a doubleheader this weekend. That will either be Friday night or Sunday.
We're being asked about our opinion on the Tkachuk Doughty thing.
Ooh, that's actually a fun one. I'm all for this league being more entertaining, players speaking out. That being said, I think Drew Doughty, pick your battles, bud. Pick your battles. I mean, the Kings are arguably, maybe even inarguably, the worst team in the NHL right now. And he's just bagging on a bunch of guys who are both ahead of him, I think, right now in public perception and in the standings. It's just not a good look. I mean, maybe Ducks fans will appreciate this, but I think that this season for the Kings, whereas for the Ducks, it has been, I would say there's a pretty obvious silver lining. I think for the Kings, it's been a disaster. And I think that there isn't a lot of relief on the way. You know, they have all these bad contracts. They don't have the blue chippers that the Ducks at least somewhat have. And I just don't think that there's as much of an exit strategy there. You know, the Kovalchuk situation, as it's been reported, has been just a complete debacle. And so all this to say, I am just very, very bearish on the Kings right now. I just have no confidence in what's going on over there. And I don't know. And so for Drew Doughty to make comments about how Brent Burns isn't good, right, or how he's so overrated. I mean, yes, Brent Burns is to some degree overrated, but do you really want to be saying that when you're the worst team in the league and he's having such a productive season? I don't know. It's just not a good look for Drew Doughty. But again, as a fan of the NHL, as someone who wants to be entertained, I definitely want more of this Drew Doughty. So I don't know. I'm a little torn here.
By the way, Bonnie's calling us out. We made no mention of Totally Offsides. Shouts to Chip and her team.
What is there to say?
We just made no mention of Totally Offsides. So congratulations, Chip. Congratulations on winning this edition of the Podcast Classic. I hope you enjoy that trophy. We're coming for it next time. We're now 1-1 in Podcast Classics, official Podcast Classics. None of this 25 hours of hockey thing that CJ did without either of us being there. So, official Podcast Classics, 1-1. We're coming for the trophy. Enjoy it while you can, Chip.
We're going to work hard in the offseason to get back to our
battle
winning,
hard,
our winning ways.
Grind it out in the corners.
You know, we could have won that game. It sounds weird to say given the scoreboard, but we could have won that game. I honestly believe it.
maybe if we had Chase DeLeo.
It was a PDO battle. Hey, that can be arranged. Just saying. Okay. Anyway, thanks a lot for listening to tonight, guys, and putting up with our silliness. We will be back this weekend to break down the Ducks doubleheader. We will talk to you then.
Bye.